9. Wax had never shot a doctor before, but he did like trying out new experiences. Perhaps today would be the day. "I'm fine," he growled as the woman dabbed with cotton at the wound on his face where the massive brute had punched him. His lip had split.
"I'll decide that," she said.
Nearby, the Iron Stand constables marched 4 befuddled bandits along the train platform, which was flooded with light from a few tall arc lamps. Wax sat on a bench near where the other surgeons were attending to the wounded. Farther back, in the shadows of the night, a tarp covered the bodies they'd retrieved. There were far too many of those.
"It looks worse than it is," Wax said.
"You had blood all over your face, my lord."
"I wiped my forehead with a bloody hand."
She had wrapped that hand with gauze already, but had agreed that the cuts were superficial. Finally, she stepped back and sighed, nodding. Wax stood up, grabbing his damp suit coat and striding toward the train. He saw Maracy peering out of the front. She shook her head. No sign of Wayne or Milan. The lump inside Wax's stomach grew 2 sizes.
"Wayne'll be fine," he told himself. "He can heal from practically anything."
But there were ways to kill a bloodmaker. A shot to the back of the head. Prolonged suffocation. Basically anything that would have forced Wayne to keep healing until his ferrochemical storages ran out. And, of course, there was the other thing. The strange effect that had somehow stolen Wax's allomantic powers. If that had worked on ferrochemy, too... Wax strode onto the train, stepping past Maracy without saying a word, and started his own search. The train was dark, now that it had stopped, and the only lights came from the platform outside.
There wasn't much to see by.
"Lord Wexilium?"
Constable Mathieu said, sticking his head in between 2 of the cars. The spindly man had a ready smile, which fell off his face as Wax bustled past.
"Busy," Wax said, entering the next car.
Blue lines let him see sources of metal even in the darkness. Wayne would be carrying metal vials and his bracers.
"Look for faint sources of metal, hidden behind something. Perhaps they just knocked him out and stuffed him somewhere."
The constable said from behind. "I was wondering if any of your other servants would be needing, emotional support?"
Wax frowned, looking out the window to where Druten was sitting, surrounded by no fewer than 3 nurses. He accepted a cup of tea from one while he complained about his ordeal. Wax could hear it even inside the train car.
"No," Wax said. "Thank you."
Mathieu followed him through the train. He was the local captain, though from what Wax gathered, this town was small enough that his big cases usually were on the order of who had been stealing Mrs. Hutchins' milk off her doorstep. He was glad to have found surgeons. Most of them probably worked half their time on cows, but it was better than nothing.
Not a few younger officers stood on the platform. They'd put away their stupid autograph books, fortunately, though they seemed deflated that their captain wouldn't let them pester Wax. "Where?" Wax thought, feeling more and more sick. Maracy arrived a moment later with an oil lamp, her light illuminating the train car for him as he poked through a cargo room full of mailbags. "He won't be in here," Wax thought. This was forward of the car that had been secretly carrying the payroll shipment. Wayne wouldn't have been able to cross through that one. They'd have had it blocked off even before the bandits arrived. Still, he wanted to be careful. He searched this one, then waved to Maracy and picked his way through the wreckage of the car that had been robbed. Mathieu tagged along.
"I have to say, Lord Wexilium, that we're very lucky you were aboard. The Night Street gang has been growing bolder and bolder, but I never thought they'd try something like this."
"So this is an established gang?" Maracy said.
"Oh, sure," Mathieu said. "Everyone in the area knows about the Night Streets, though mostly they hit cities closer to the roughs. We figure it's slim pickings out past the mountains, so they have begun to venture inward. But this? A full-on train robbery? And stealing Eric El Perol? That's daring. Those folks make weapons, you know."
"They had at least one Allomancer with them,"
Wax said, leading the way through the empty courier car, which still smelled faintly of formaldehyde.
I hadn't heard that, Mathieu said. Even luckier you were along.
I didn't stop them from getting away or from stealing the payroll.
You killed or captured a good half of them, my lord. The ones we've got, they'll give us a lead on the others.
He hesitated.
We'll have to put together a posse, my lord. They'll be making for the roughs. Sure could use your help.
Wax swept this room, focusing on the blue lines. And the man with the limp?
My lord?
He seemed to be in charge of them, Wax said. A man in a fine suit who walked with a cane, about 6 feet tall, with a narrow face and dark hair. Who is he?
I don't know that one, my lord. Donnie is the leader.
Big guy? Wax asked. Neck like a stump?
No, my lord. Donnie is little and feisty. Evilest rusting kig you've ever seen.
Kig? It was slang for a Kolos-blooded person. Wax hadn't seen anyone among the bandits with the proper skin color for that.
Thank you, Captain, Wax said.
The man seemed to recognize it as a dismissal, but he hesitated.
And can we count on your help, my lord, when we chase down Donnie and his gang? I'll let you know.
Mathieu saluted, which was completely inappropriate. Wax wasn't part of this jurisdiction, and retreated. Wax continued searching, pulling open a luggage compartment beneath the first passenger car. The metal lines leading into it only pointed at a few pieces of baggage.
Waxillium, Marisi said, you can't help with their hunt. We have a job already.
Might be related.
Might not be, she said. You heard him, Waxillium. These guys are a known criminal element.
Who happened to rob the very train we were on.
But at the same time seemed utterly shocked by the presence of an Allomancer gunman in the last car. Instead of tossing dynamite at us and riddling the coach with bullets, they sent a couple men to rob what they assumed would be easy pickings.
Wax chewed on that, then checked another luggage compartment, bracing himself as he did so. No bodies. He let out a breath.
I can't think about this right now, he said.
She nodded in understanding. They checked the other compartments, and he didn't see any suspicious lines, so they moved on. Crossing the space between cars, he spotted Steris watching him. She sat alone on a bench with a blanket around her shoulders, holding a cup of something that steamed. She seemed perfectly calm. He continued on. Losing friends was part of a lawman's life. It happened to him more times than he wanted to count. But after what had happened back in the city 6 months ago, well, he wasn't sure what losing Wayne would do to him. He steeled himself, moved to the next car, and opened the first of its luggage compartments, then froze. Faint steel lines coming from another place in this train car. They were moving. Wax rushed toward them. Marisi followed, suddenly alert, her lamp held high. The lines were coming from the floor inside one of the rooms. Only no luggage was on its racks, and no litter was on its floor. It was a private compartment that hadn't been rented out for the trip. Wax entered and ripped open the luggage compartment in the floor. Wayne blinked up at him. The younger man had mussed hair and his shirt was unbuttoned, but he wasn't in any bonds that Wax could see. He didn't seem to have been harmed at all. In fact, Wax crouched down, Marisi's light revealing what had been hidden to him by the overhang of the luggage compartment. Milan, shirt completely off, was in the compartment too. She sat up, entirely unashamed of her nudity.
We stopped, she said. Are we there already?
Well, how was I supposed to know we'd get rusting attacked?
Wayne exclaimed, now more properly clothed, though his hair was still a mess. Wax sat listening with half an ear. The train officials had opened a room in the station for them to use. He knew he should be angry, but he was mostly just relieved.
Because we are us, Marisi said, arms folded. Because we're on our way to a dangerous situation. I don't know. You could at least have told us what you were doing.
She hesitated.
And by the way, what do you think you were doing?
Wayne bowed his head where he sat before her. Milan leaned against the wall near the door. She was looking toward the ceiling, as if trying to feign innocence.
"Moving on," Wayne said, pointing at Maracy. "Like you told me to."
"That wasn't moving on. That was running on at full speed. It was shooting on forward like a bullet, Wayne."
"I don't like doing stuff halfway," he said solemnly, hand over his heart. "It's been a long time since I had me a good neckin', on account of my diligent monogamous idealization of a beauteous but unavailable—"
"And how," Maracy interrupted, "did you not hear the fight? There was gunfire, Wayne, practically on top of you."
"Well, see," he said, growing red, "we was real busy. And we were down next to the tracks, which made a lot of noise. We'd wanted a place what was private-like, you know, and—"
He shrugged.
"Bah," Maracy said. "Do you realize how worried Waxillium was?"
"Don't bring me into this," Wax said, seated with his feet up on the next bench.
"Oh, and you approve of this behavior?" Maracy asked, turning on him.
"Heavens no," Wax said. "If I approved of half the things Wayne does, Harmony would probably strike me dead on the spot. But he's alive, and we're alive, and we can't blame him for getting distracted during what we assumed would be a simple ride." Maracy eyed him, then sighed and walked back out onto the platform, passing me along without a glance. Wayne stood and wandered over to him, pulling his box of gum from his pocket and tapping it against his palm to settle the powder inside.
"These thieves. Did one of them happen to shoot her when you weren't looking? 'Cause she's sure gotten stiff all of a sudden."
"She was just worried about you," Wax said. "I'll talk to her after she's cooled down." Milan left her position by the door.
"Was there anything strange about the attack?"
"Plenty of things," Wax said, standing and stretching. Rusts. Was he really getting too old for all this, as Lessie always joked with him? He usually felt exhilarated after a fight. "It's the deaths," he thought. Only one passenger had died, an older man, but they'd lost half a dozen payroll guards, not to mention the many wounded. "One of the bandits," he said to Milan. "He did something that dampened my allomancy."
"A leecher?"
she asked. Wax shook his head. "He didn't touch me." Leechers who burned chromium could blank another allomancer's metals, but it required touch. "It did feel the same. My steel was there one moment, then gone the next. But Milan, there was some kind of device involved. A little metal cube."
"Wait,"
a voice said. Maracy appeared in the doorway.
"A cube?"
All three of them looked at her, and she blushed in the harsh electric light.
"What?"
"You stalked away," Wayne pointed. "Indigenously."
"And now I'm stalking back in,"
Maracy said, striding toward Wax and fishing in her pocket.
"I can be indignant in here just as easily."
She pulled her hand out, holding a small metal cube. The same cube he'd seen before his steel was drained. Wax plucked it from her palm.
"Where'd you get this?"
"The guy with the cane dropped it," Maracy said. "He moved as if to pull a gun on me and raised this."
Wax turned it toward Milan, and she shook her head.
"That's a real strange gun," Wayne noted.
"Is there anything in that lore Vendel talked about," Wax said, "that mentions a device that negates allomancy?"
"Nothing I've heard,"
Milan said.
"I mean," Wayne said, "it ain't even got a barrel."
"But you said you don't pay attention to the research, Milan,"
Maracy said, taking the cube back.
"That's true."
"And if they could shoot the rustin' thing," Wayne added, "the bullet would be small as a flea."
Maracy sighed.
"Wayne, can't you ever let a joke die?"
"Hon, that joke started dead," he said. "I'm just giving it a proper burial."
"We need another train south," Maracy said, turning to the others.
"These bandits might have information," Wayne said. "Chasing them down could be useful. Sides, I didn't get to stomp none of them, on account of some untimely snogging."
"At least it was good snogging,"
Milan added. Then to Maracy's glare she added,
"What, It was. Poor guy hadn't had a proper snog in years. Had a lot of pent-up energy.
You're not even human, Marcy said. You should be ashamed. Not to mention that you're 600 years old.
I'm young at heart. Really. I copied this one off a 16-year-old that I ate a few months back.
The room grew very still.
Oh, was that gauche?
Milan said, wincing.
That was gauche, wasn't it? She didn't taste very good, if that's anything to you. Hardly rotten at all, and... I should stop talking about this. New Saren, are we going or staying to chase bandits?
Going, Wax said, which earned a nod from Marcy. If this is connected, we'll run into them later. If it's not, then I'll see what I can do to help once we've dealt with my uncle.
And how are we going to get to New Saren? Wayne said. Doesn't look like our train will be leaving any time soon.
Freight train, Wax said, checking the wall lists. Coming through in an hour. They're going to move our train onto the repair track so we can flag that one down for a ride. It won't be comfortable, but it will get us there by morning. Go gather your luggage. Hopefully there aren't too many holes in it. Wayne and Milan obeyed, walking out side by side. Maybe there was actually something there between them. If anything, Wayne didn't seem the least bit put out by being reminded just how alien and just how old Milan was. Then again, Wayne wasn't known for his taste in women. Or, well, his taste at all, really. Wax glanced at Marcy, who had remained behind. She held up the little cube, turning it over in her fingers, inspecting the intricate carvings it bore on its various faces.
"Can I get Vendel's notes back from you?" she said. "Maybe there's something in them about this thing."
More convinced this wasn't a random train robbery?
"Maybe a little,"
Marcy said.
"You should talk to my sister."
"She seemed perfectly calm when I checked on her earlier."
"Of course she's calm," Marcy said. "She's Steris. But she's also doing needlework."
"And that's bad?"
"Steris only does needlework when she has an overwhelming desire to appear normal," Marcy said. "She read somewhere that it's an appropriate hobby for a woman of means. She hates it to death, but won't tell a soul. Trust me, if needlework is involved, she's upset. I could talk to her, but she's never listened to me. She didn't even know about me until we were teenagers. Besides, you'll need to get used to this."
She strode from the room, and Wax, oddly, found himself smiling. Whatever else could be said, Marcy had come a long way since he'd first met her. He took his jacket off the hook on the wall and slipped it on, then walked back into the night. Marcy was calling for the station master, probably to arrange their passage on the cargo train. Wax strolled along the tracks, passing cold electric lights until he reached the bench where Steris worked on her needlepoint. He settled down beside her.
"Marcy says you're having a tough time of it."
Steris paused her needlepoint.
"You're a very straightforward man, Lord Waxillium."
"Can be."
"As we both know, it's all an act. You were raised among Ellendale's elite. You had tutors and diction coaches. In your youth, you spent your time at parties and balls."
"And then I spent 20 years in the roughs," Wax said. "The winds out there can weather the strongest granite. Are you surprised they can do the same to a man?"
She turned to him, head cocked to the side. Wax sighed and leaned back, stretching his legs out, ankles crossed.
"Have you ever been somewhere you didn't fit in? A place where everyone else seems to get it immediately? They know what to do. They know what to say. But Rosts, you have to work to untangle it all."
"That describes my entire life,"
Steris said softly.
He put his arm around her and let her rest her head on his shoulder. "Well, that's how those parties were for me. Social situations were a chore. Everyone laughing, and me just standing there, stressed out of my mind and trying to figure out the right thing to do. I didn't smile a lot back then. Guess I still don't. I'd escape the parties when I could, find my way to a quiet balcony."
"And do what? Read?"
Wax chuckled.
No. I don't mind a book now and then, but Wayne is the real reader.
Steris raised her head, looking surprised.
I'm serious, Wax said.
Granted, he likes the ones with pictures now and then, but he does read. Often out loud. You should hear him do the voices to himself.
Me? I'd just find a balcony that looked out over the city somewhere, and I'd stare. Listen.
He smiled.
When I was a boy, more than a few people thought I was slow because I'd sit there staring out a window.
Then you found your way to the Roughs.
I was so glad to be away from Ellendell and its phoniness. You call me Blunt. Well, that's the man I want to be. That's the man I admire. Perhaps I'm only acting like him, but it's a sincere act. Hang me, but it is.
Steris sat quietly for a few moments, head on his shoulder, and Wax stared out into the night. A nice night, all things considered.
You're wrong,
she noted, sounding drowsy.
You do smile. Most often when you're flying on lines of steel. It's the only time I think I see pure joy in you.
He looked down at her, but she'd apparently dozed off, judging by the way she was breathing. He settled back, thinking about what she'd said, until the cargo train finally pulled into the station. Upper right quadrant of the new Ascendancy broadsheet. Does Harmony have a metal? The First Age philosopher, Galabras Menthon, meant this rhetorically, but even the Lord Mistborn thought on this when he famously said, "Having the has-sazed a metal?" From councils to pubs, the question is still debated, but now breakthroughs in science have brought us closer to an answer. Continued on back. Farthing Mansion hit. An act of vandalism and thievery has the city's elite on edge. Late last night, someone broke into Farthing Mansion, stole some items, and vandalized the wall with a reverse gold symbol. Lady Farthing is offering a reward for the return of her jewelry. Please report all information to the Uptown Precinct. Continued on back. The mark of the vandal, the reverse gold symbol. Workers unite! Enormous mass meeting tonight at 7th hour at the crossing of Emble and 5th. Stand up to unfair taxes, low wages. Soother's Choice Chewing Gum. Stick it to the Dell and buy local. Soother's Choice is the only choice. 10. Wax started awake to the sound of distant explosions. He immediately scrambled to his feet, reaching for his medals, bleary-eyed and disoriented. Where was he? Crew cabin of the cargo train. It was large, with some stiff couches in the back for the engineers to catch a nap while their train was waiting to be unloaded. Steris was asleep on one, wrapped in his jacket. Wayne dozed in the corner, hat over his face. They'd left the servants behind for now. They would come along on the next passenger train. Milan had chosen to ride in the back with their luggage. She had wanted to look through her bundles of bones to pick the right body for the night. Wax downed medals and whipped out Vindication, stumbling forward toward the sounds, which, now fully awake, he wasn't certain were explosions at all. A continuous rumble, like an earthquake, off in the distance. He stepped out into the cab proper of the engine car. This was a newer machine, one of the oil-driven ones, with no need for a coal tender. Maracy stood near the front with the engineer, a tall fellow with bright eyes and forearms like pistons. That rumbling. Wax frowned, lowering his gun as Maracy glanced at him. The sky was bright blue. Morning had arrived. He stepped into the cabin and could see that ahead New Saren rose before them. The city spread across a series of enormous, flat-topped stone terraces. There were at least a dozen of them, and each was split by multiple streams which crossed them and then dropped off the edge down to the next terrace. The sound wasn't an earthquake or explosion, but that of waterfalls. In places, the drop was just a ripple, a fall of some 5 feet or so. But in others, majestic waterfalls plunged 50 feet or more before pounding onto the next stone platform. It looked like a man-made effect, for the various split streams and waterfalls eventually ran back together into the river, which flowed away from the city toward distant Ellendale. Wax slid Vindication into her holster, though it took 2 tries because he was so mesmerized by the waterfalls. Indeed, the whole city. Buildings sprouted between the rivers and vibrant green vines draped the cliffs like nature's own trellises. Beyond, the Saren Mountains rose, lofty and whited at the tops. Marcy grinned, leaning out of the cab to get a better look up at the heights of the city. The engineer stood by his levers, valves, and cranks, trying to act casual, though he was obviously watching Wax and Marcy for their reactions.
"I often think," the man eventually said, "that Harmony was showing off a little when he made this place."
"I had no idea this was here," Wax said, stepping up beside Marcy. Behind him, Wayne yawned and stumbled to his feet.
"Yeah, well," the engineer said, "people from Ellendale often forget there's a whole country out here. No offense, my lord. There's a lot of Ellendale to take in, so it makes sense you'd get a little blinded by it."
"You're from New Saren?" Marcy asked.
"Born and raised, Captain Combs."
"Then you can tell us where to find our hotel, perhaps?" Marcy asked. "The Copper Gate?"
"Oh, that's a nice one," the engineer said, pointing. "Top terrace, in the Waterman District. Look for the big statue of the Lord Mistborn. It's not 2 blocks from there."
"How close can you get us?" Marcy asked.
"Not close at all, I'm afraid," the engineer said. "We're not a passenger train, and even those can only go to the middle tiers. We'll be down at the bottom. It'll take you a few hours to ride the gondolas up. There are ramps, too, if you'd prefer a carriage, but they take longer. And the gondolas have a better view."
Gondolas would have been wonderful, Wax thought, if most of them had had more than a few hours of sleep. With the reception tonight, they'd need to be rested and ready to go. "Shortcut?" he asked Marcy.
"You realize I'm wearing a skirt?"
"I do. What happened to that fancy new constable uniform with the trousers?"
"Packed away. Not everyone likes wearing uniforms when we don't have to, Waxillium."
"Well, you can wait and take the gondolas," Wax said. "Think of me resting peacefully in a soft hotel bed while you blink bleary eyes and droop against..."
"All right, fine," Marcy said, stepping up to him. "Just stay away from the crowds."
Wax grabbed her around the waist.
"I'll be back for the rest of you," he told Wayne, who nodded. "Engineer, have our things sent to the Copper Gate, if you please."
"Yes, my lord."
Wax slid open the side of the cab, took another drink of metal flakes, recovered from the stash in his luggage, then pulled Marcy tight, burned steel, and leaped. A flared push sent them soaring away from the train, which was slowing as it approached the buildings clustered around the base of New Saren. They dropped toward these, but a shot from Vindication as they neared the ground gave him something to bounce off of. He sent them upward, past the lower tiers, using metal he found there to keep them aloft. The homes here were much smaller than those in Ellendale. Quaint, even. In Ellendale, you could rarely afford to waste space on a single dwelling. Even in the slums, towering apartments were the norm. There was a kind of eternal shift going on, where sections of town would fall into disrepair over time, filling with the poor, while those able to afford something new moved to other sections. It was fascinating to him that, if you looked at old maps, what were now slums had once been considered prime real estate. He saw few apartment buildings and only 3 skyscrapers confined to a small commercial district on the top terrace. Though the terraces constrained the city's boundaries, they looked large enough to hold the population. Lots of parks and small streams, none deep enough to be navigable like Ellendale's canals. He stayed to the rooftops rather than the streets, for Marcy's sake, though she didn't have much trouble with her skirt. She'd tucked it around her legs before they started, and the generally upward motion kept it from flaring.
waxed through the two of them in great leaping arcs over residential areas until they reached the next cliff face, where he found a gondola and used it as an anchor to shoot them up the 50 feet or so toward the top tier of the terraces. He exulted in the moment, the freedom, the beauty of it. There was a majesty about soaring alongside a churning waterfall, with sparkling pools and lush gardens spreading out beneath. They topped the cliff face, and Wax landed them softly alongside the falls. Marcy let out a held breath as he set her down. He could tell from the tension of her grip that she hadn't enjoyed the flight as much as he had. Steel pushing wasn't natural to her, nor were the heights. She backed away from the cliff as soon as she was free.
"Going to get the others?" she asked.
"Let's find the hotel first," Wax said, pointing the way toward a statue he'd spotted upon landing. He could still make out the green patina of the statue's head over the tops of the nearby homes. He started in that direction. Marcy joined him, and they entered a street with a fair amount of foot traffic, paper girls and boys hawking broadsheets at every corner. Fewer horses or carriages than in Ellendale, almost none, though he did see a fair number of pedicabs. That made sense with the layout of the city. He found it interesting that the gondola system wasn't only for getting between terraces. There were also lines crossing the sky above them, carting people from one section of this terrace to another.
"Like a shark among minnows," Marcy mumbled.
"What's that?" Wax asked.
"Look at how people swerve around you," Marcy said. "Lord Seminus once did a study comparing constables to sharks, showing how the people in a crowded walkway responded exactly the same way as animals do to a predator moving nearby."
He hadn't noticed, but she was right. People gave him a wide berth, though not because they guessed he was a constable. It was the mistcoat duster, the weapons, and perhaps his height. Everyone seemed a little shorter down here, and he saw over the crowd by several inches. In Ellendale, his clothing had been abnormal, but so was everyone's. That city was a mishmash, like an old barrel full of spent cartridges, all different calibers represented. Here, the people wore lighter clothing than in Ellendale. Pastel dresses for the ladies, striped white suits, and boater hats for the men. Compared to them, he was a bullet hole in a stained glass window. "Never been good at blending in anyway," he said.
"Fair enough," Marcy said. "I've been meaning to ask. Do you need Wayne tonight?"
"At the party?" Wax asked, amused. "I have trouble imagining a situation where he doesn't end up drunk in the punch bowl."
"Then I'll borrow him," Marcy said. "I want to check the graveyards for Relure's spike."
Wax grunted. "That will be dirty work."
"Which is why I asked for Wayne."
"Noted. What do you think the chances are you'll find the thing buried in a grave?" Marcy shrugged.
"I figure we'll start with the most obvious and easiest method."
"Grave robbing is the easiest method?"
"It is with proper preparation," Marcy said. "I don't intend to do the digging, after all."
Wax stopped listening. The chatter of the crowd faded as he froze in place, staring at a broadsheet held up by a paper girl on a nearby corner. That symbol, the jagged reverse maw. He knew that symbol all too well. He left Marcy mid-sentence, pushing through the crowd to the girl and snatching the paper.
That symbol. Impossible.
"Farthing Mansion hit," the headline read. He fished out a few clips for the girl. "Farthing Mansion? Where is it?"
"Just up Blossom Way,"
the girl said, pointing with her chin and making the coins in his palm disappear. "Come on," he said, interrupting Marcy as she started saying something. People did make way for him, which was convenient. He could have taken to the sky, but he found the mansion without difficulty, partially because of the people crowded outside and pointing. The symbol was painted in red, exactly like the one he'd known back in the roughs. But this time, it marred the wall of a fine three-story stone mansion instead of a stagecoach.
"Waxillium, for the love of sanity," Marcy said, catching up to him. "What has gotten into you?"
He pointed at the symbol.
"I recognize that," Marcy said. "Why would I recognize that?"
You read the accounts of my time in the Roughs, Wax said. It's in there. That's the symbol of Ape Manton, one of my old nemeses.
Ape Manton? Maracy said. Didn't he?
Yes, Wax said, remembering the nights of torture. He hunts allomancers. But why would he be here? Wax had put him away, and not just in some minor village. He'd been locked up in True Metal, biggest town in the Northern Roughs, with a jail like a vice. How in Harmony's true name had he gotten all the way down to New Saren? Robbery wouldn't be the end of Manton's activities here. He always had a motive behind the thefts, a goal. I have to figure out what he took and why he... No. No, not right now. Let's get to the hotel, Wax said, ripping himself away from the sight of that red symbol.
Rusts, Maracy said, hurrying after him. Could he be involved somehow?
With the set? Not a chance. He hates allomancers.
Enemy of my enemy?
Not the ape, Wax said. He wouldn't take the hand of a metalborn trying to save him from slipping to his death.
So
he's not part of this, Wax said. We ignore him. I'm here for my uncle.
Maracy nodded, but seemed disturbed. They passed a lurcher juggler, dropping balls and tugging them back up into the air, along with the occasional object from among the amused crowd of watchers. A waste of allomantic abilities. And all these people. Suffocating. He had hoped that in leaving Ellendale, he would escape crowded streets. He nearly pulled out his gun and fired a shot to clear them all away.
Wax,
Maracy said, taking his arm. What?
What?
Rust, your stare could nail a person's head to the wall right now.
I'm fine, he said, pulling his arm away from her.
This vendetta against your uncle is...
It's not a vendetta.
Wax picked up his pace, striding through the crowd, mistcoat tassels flaring behind him.
You know what he's doing.
No, and neither do you,
Maracy said.
He's breeding allomancers, Wax said. Maybe ferrochemists. I don't need to know his exact plan to know how bad that is. What if he's making an army of thugs and coin shots? Twinborn. Compounders.
That might be true, Maracy admitted. But you aren't chasing him because of any of that, are you? He beat you. In the Hundred Lives case, Mr. Suit got the best of you. Now you're going to win the war where you lost the battle.
He stopped in place, turning on her.
How petty do you think I am? Considering what I just told you, she said, I'd say I consider you precisely that petty. It's not wrong to be angry at Suit, Waxillium. He's holding your sister. But Rusts, please don't let it cloud your judgment.
He took a deep breath, then gestured toward the mansion up the street. You want me to go chasing after the ape instead?
No, Maracy said, then blushed. I agree that we need to stay focused on getting back the spike.
You're here for the spike, Maracy, Wax said. I'm here to find Suit.
He nodded down the street toward a discreet hotel sign barely visible on the front of a building.
You go check us in. I'm going to fetch the others.
With this suite and the others, you'll basically have the entire top floor to yourselves.
The hotel owner, who insisted upon being called Aunt Jin, beamed as she said it. Wayne yawned, rubbing his eyes as he poked through the lavish room's bar.
Right, lovely. Can I have your hat?
My hat?
The elderly woman looked up at the oversized hat. The sides drooped magnificently, and the thing was festooned with flowers, like oodles of them. Silk, he figured, but they were really good replicas.
You have a lady friend? Aunt Jin asked. You wish to give her the hat?
Nah, Wayne said. I need to wear it next time I'm an old lady.
The next time you... What?
Aunt Jin grew pale, but that was probably on account of the fact that Wax went stomping by, wearing his full rusting mist coat. That man never could figure out how to blend in.
Do these windows open?
Wax asked, pointing toward the penthouse suite's enormous bay windows. He stepped up onto one of the sofas and shoved on the window.
Well, they used to open, Aunt Jin said, but they rattled in the breezes, so we painted them shut and sealed the latches. Never could stand the thought of someone.
Wax shoved one of them open, breaking off the latch and making a sharp cracking sound as the paint outside ribbed because of some of the wood splintering.
Lord Ladrian,
Aunt Jin said with a gasp. I'll pay for the repairs, Wax said, hopping off the couch. I need that to open in case I have to jump out.
Jump?
Aha,
Wayne said, pulling open the bar's bottom cabinet.
Alcohol?
Marcy asked, walking by.
Peanuts,
Wayne said, spitting out his gum and then popping a handful of nuts into his mouth.
I ain't had nothing to eat since I swiped that fruit in Steris's luggage.
What are you babbling about?
Steris asked from the couch, where she was writing in her notebook.
I left you one of my shoes in trade,
Wayne said, then dug in his duster's pocket, pulling out the other shoe.
Speaking of that, Jin, will you swap me your hat for this one?
Your shoe?
Aunt Jin asked, turning back toward him, then jumping as Wax forced open another window.
Sure, Wayne said. They're both clothes, right?
What would I do with a man's shoe?
Wear it the next time you gotta be a fella, Wayne said. You've got the perfect face for it. Good shoulders, too.
Well, I...
Please ignore him, Steris said, rising and walking over. Here, I've prepared for you a list of possible scenarios that might transpire during our residence here.
Steris, Wax said, forcing open the third and final window.
What?
She demanded.
I will not have the staff unprepared. Their safety is our concern.
Fire? Aunt Jin asked, reading the list.
Shootouts, robbery, hostage situations, explosions?
That one is completely unfair, Wax said. You've been listening to Wayne.
Things do explode round you, mate,
Wayne said, munching peanuts. Nice bit of salt on these.
He's right, unfortunately, Steris said. I've accounted for 17 explosions involving you. That's a huge statistical anomaly, even considering your profession.
You're kidding. 17?
Afraid so.
Huh. He had the decency to look proud of it, at least.
A pastry shop once blew up while we was in it, Wayne said, leaning into Aunt Jin. Dynamite in the cake. Big mess.
He held out some peanuts toward her.
How about I throw in these peanuts with the shoe?
Those are my peanuts, from this very room.
But they're worth more now, Wayne said, on account of my being real hungry.
I told you to ignore him,
Steris said, tapping on the notebook she'd handed Aunt Jin.
Look, you only read the table of contents. The rest of the pages contain explanations of the possible scenarios I've outlined and suggested responses to them. I've sorted the list by potential property damage.
Wax leaped into the center of the room, then thrust his hand forward. The door quivered.
What is he doing?
Aunt Jin asked.
Checking to see the best places in the room are for slamming the door with his mind, Wayne said. In case someone bursts in on us.
Just read the notebook, all right?
Steris requested in a pleasant tone. Aunt Jin looked toward her, seeming bewildered.
Are these things threats? No, of course not, Steris said. I just want you to be prepared.
She's thorough, Wayne said.
I like to be thorough.
Usually that means if you ask her to kill a fly, she'll burn down the house just to be extra sure it gets done.
Wayne, Steris said, you're needlessly making the lady concerned. Flooding from a diverted waterfall,
Aunt Jin said, reading from the book again.
Coloss attack? Cattle stampede through the lobby? That one is highly unlikely, Steris said. But it never hurts to be prepared. But...
The door to the adjoining suite slammed open.
Hello, humans,
Milan said, stepping into the doorway, wearing nothing more than a tight pair of shorts and a cloth wrapped around her chest.
I need to put on something appropriate for tonight. What do you think? Large breasts? Small breasts? Extra large breasts?
Everybody in the room paused, then turned toward her.
What?
Milan said.
Picking a proper bust size is vital to a lady's evening preparations.
Silence.
That's kind of an improper question, Milan, Steris finally said.
You're just jealous because you can't take yours off to go for a run,
Milan said.
Hey, where is that bellboy with my things? I swear if he drops my bags and cracks any of my skulls, there will be fury in this room.
She stalked away.
Did she say skulls?
Aunt Jin said. The door slammed. Aha! Wax said, lowering his hand. There it is.
Marcy approached and wrapped her arm around the elderly lady's shoulders, leading her away.
Don't worry. It won't be nearly as bad as they make it seem. Likely nothing will happen to you or your hotel.
Other than Wax ripping your windows apart, Wayne noted.
Other than that,
Marcy said, giving him a glare.
Young lady,
Aunt Jin said under her breath,
you need to get away from these people.
They're fine,
Marcy said, reaching the door. We've just had a long night. Aunt Jin nodded hesitantly.
Good, Marcy said. Now when you get down below, would you please send someone to the Trade Bureau for me? Have them collect the names of each and every person who works at the local graveyards.
Graveyards?
It's vitally important, Marcy said, then pushed the woman out and shut the door.
Graveyards?
Milan said, sticking her head into the room. She was now completely bald.
Reminds me, would you order me something to eat? A nice hunk of aged meat?
Rotting, you mean, Wax said.
Nothing like the odor of a nice flank after a day in the sun,
Milan said, ducking back into her room as a knock came at the other door.
Ah, my bags. Excellent. What? No, of course there aren't corpses in these. Why would I need bones with the flesh still on them? Thank you. Bye.
Wayne popped the last of the peanuts into his mouth.
I don't know about you all, but I'm going to find a place to snore for a few hours.
Sleeping arrangements, Waxillium?
Marcy asked.
You and Steris in the suite across the hall, Wax said. Wayne and I in here. Milan gets her own room. She probably wants to,
melt,
Marcy offered.
On her own.
I'm good, really,
Milan called from the next room. A second later, she opened the door again. She wore the same bones and build, but this time she was completely bare-chested. It wasn't a woman's chest.
I solved the problem,
Milan said.
I'll go as a fellow. That will probably be more covert anyway. Just have to choose the right bones.
Wayne cocked his head. She'd sculpted her face, too, giving herself masculine features. Steris's eyes were bulging. At least that was worth seeing.
You're...
Steris said.
You'll become a...
A man?
Milan asked.
Yeah. It'll look better when I've decided on the right body. Need to settle on a voice, too.
She looked around the room.
Is this a problem?
Everyone looked at Wayne for some reason. He thought for a moment, then shrugged. Maybe he should have given his shoes to her.
You don't mind?
Steris demanded of him.
It's still her.
But she looks like a man.
So does the lady what runs this house, Wayne said. Well, she has kids, so someone still decided to take her and...
It will do, Milan, Wax said, resting a hand on Steris's arm. Assuming you can get into the party.
Don't worry about that,
she said, spinning around.
I will get in and be ready to give you support. But this is your play, Ladrian, not mine. You're the detective. I'm just around for the punchy-punchy, stabby-stabby.
She closed the door. Wayne shook his head.
Now that's a situation a man don't rightly encounter all that often.
Well, he'd found occasion to be an old lady now and then, so it made sense to him. It was probably good for a woman to be a fellow once in a while, if only to offer some perspective. Easier to piss, too. Couldn't discount that. She assumes, Wax said, that our detective style isn't normally the punchy-punchy, stabby-stabby type.
To be fair, Wayne said, it's usually a more shooty-shooty, wacky-wacky type.
Marcy rubbed her forehead.
Why are we having this conversation?
Because we're tired, Wax said. Get some sleep, everyone. Wayne, you're going to go with Marcy tonight and dig up some graves.
He took a deep breath.
And I, unfortunately, am going to a party.
11. Wearing a formal cravat and jacket reminded Wax of the year after he'd left the village. A year when his uncle had gleefully wrapped him in the packaging of a young nobleman and presented him to the city's elite, feeling he'd won some kind of war when Wax was expelled from Terrace society. Wax had moved in with his parents, of course, but it had been his uncle who had overseen his education, grooming him specifically as heir to the house. After that time in the village, Wax's life had grown to be less and less about his immediate family. He'd barely seen his parents during that year, despite living with them. That was when his uncle's grip had really started to strangle him. Wax tapped his fingers on the armrest of his carriage, remembering those parties. How much were his memories of them colored by his uncle's presence? The carriage eventually pulled up before a resplendent mansion with stained glass windows and limelights burning outside. A classical style of lighting, though the interior had little in common with the ancient keeps of lore it was meant to evoke, as he well knew from the floor plans he'd memorized earlier today while the others were sleeping. This mansion was more sprawling than imposing, with a multi-peaked roof design like the profile of a mountain range. A line of carriages waited to pull through the coach portico and drop off their occupants.
"You're nervous,"
Steris said, laying her hand on his arm. She wore white lace gloves, and her dress, which she'd fretted over for at least an hour, was one of the filmy and gauzy ones that the most fashionable ladies in Ellendale were wearing this year. The skirt was more full and cloud-like than the more traditional gowns Steris usually favored. He'd been surprised when she'd chosen it. Most of her wardrobe, especially on this trip, was chosen for utility. Why wear this now?
"I'm not nervous," Wax said. "I'm contemplative."
"Shall we go over the plan?"
"What plan?" Wax said.
Relure, in his ravings, had directed them toward this party of Kalasina Shores, who was a lady of some prestige in New Saren, and who he implied was connected to all this. She was their best lead, though Relure's notebook had also listed five other families he thought were of interest. The problem was, none of these notes mentioned why they were of interest, or what it was Relure thought they knew. Why would a group of lords and ladies of the outer city's elite have anything to do with an ancient archaeological relic? True, some noblemen like to consider themselves gentlemen adventurers, but those types mostly sat around smoking cigars and talking. At least that fop Jack actually left his rusting house. Time wore on, as carriages moved up the drive with all the speed of a line of cows on a hot day. Finally, Wax kicked open his door. "Let's walk."
"Oh, dear," Steris said with a sigh. "Again?"
"Don't tell me you didn't plan for this."
"I did. But this line isn't that long, Lord Waxillium. Don't you think this time we should wait?"
"I can see the rusting front doors," Wax said, pointing. "We can walk to them in 30 seconds, or we can sit here and wait as pompous people waddle out of their seats and fuss with their scarves."
"I see the knight is starting off on the right foot," Steris said.
Wax hopped down, ignoring the footman's offered hand. He waved the man back and helped Steris from the vehicle himself.
"Go ahead and park," he called to the coachman. "We'll call for you when we're done."
He hesitated.
"If you hear gunshots, go back to the hotel. We'll make our own way."
The coachman started, but nodded. Wax held his arm out for Steris, and the two strolled along the path into the mansion grounds, passing carriages full of people who seemed to be trying to glare at them without actually looking in their direction.
"I've prepared a list for you," Steris said.
"I'm so surprised."
"Now, no complaining, Waxillium. It will help. I've put the list in this little book," Steris said, producing a palm-sized notebook, "for ease of reference. Each page contains a conversation opener indexed to the people it will likely work best upon. The numbers below list ways you can segue the conversation into useful areas and perhaps figure out what our targets are up to and what is their connection to the Bands of Mourning."
I'm not socially incompetent, Steris, Wax said. I can make small talk.
I know that, Steris said. But I'd rather avoid an incident like the set party.
Which set party?
The one where you headbutted someone.
He cocked his head. Oh, right. That smarmy little man with the ridiculous mustache.
Lord Westweather Set, Steris said. Heir to the house fortune.
Right, right, Wax said. Stupid Sets. In my defense, he did call me out, demanding to duel a coin shot. I probably saved his life.
By breaking his nose. Steris held up her hand. I am not requesting justifications or explanations, Lord Waxillium. I merely thought I'd do what I could to help.
He grumbled, but took the book, flipping through it by lamplight as they walked across the grounds. At the back of the book were descriptions of the various people likely to be at the party. He'd memorized some descriptions Vendel had sent, but this list was far more extensive. As usual, Steris had done her research. He smiled, tucking the book into his jacket pocket. Where had she found the time? They continued up the path, though Wax froze as he heard rustling in the shrubbery nearby. He burned steel instantly, noticing some moving points of metal, and his hand went to the pistol under his jacket. A dirty face peered out and grinned. The eyes were milky white.
"Clips for the poor, good sir,"
the beggar said, stretching out a hand and exposing long, unkempt fingernails and a ragged shirt. Wax kept his hand on his weapon, studying the man. Steris cocked her head.
"Are you wearing cologne, beggar?"
Wax nodded as he too smelled it, faintly. The beggar started, as if surprised, then grinned.
"It's got a good kick to it, m'lady."
"You've been drinking cologne?" Steris asked. "Well, that can't be healthy."
"You should be away from here, beggar," Wax said, eyeing the cluster of attendants and coachmen closer to the building's entrance. "These are private grounds."
"Oh, my lord, I know it. I do,"
the beggar laughed.
"I own the place, technically. Now, regarding those coins for old Hoyd, my good lord."
He pushed his hand forward farther, eyes staring sightlessly. Wax dug in his pocket. "Here." He tossed the man a banknote. "Get off the grounds and find yourself a proper drink."
"A generous lord, indeed,"
the beggar said, dropping to his knees and fishing for the banknote.
"But too much. Far too much."
Wax took Steris's arm again, walking her toward the imposing front doors.
"My lord,"
the beggar screeched.
"Your change."
He saw the blue line moving and reacted immediately, spinning and catching the coin, which had been hurled with exacting accuracy at his head. So, not blind after all. Wax snorted, pocketing the coin, as a passing groundsman saw the beggar and shouted,
"Not you again!"
The beggar cackled and disappeared back into the shrubs.
"What was that about?" Steris asked.
"Damned if I know," Wax said. "Shall we?" They proceeded down the row of waiting carriages, and though the line had sped up during their stroll, they still reached the front doors before they otherwise would have. Wax tipped his head toward a large woman who barely fit through the door of her carriage, then strode up the steps with Steris on his arm. He presented his card at the door, though they would know to watch for him. This was no simple reception. This was about politics. There would probably be only one official speech, that of the host to the attendees, but everyone knew why they were here. To mingle, share ideas, and likely be invited to donate to one of many causes reflecting Outer City's interests. Wax passed the doorkeeper, who cleared his throat and pointed toward an alcove in the side of the entryway. There, servants were taking hats, coats, and shawls. "We've nothing to check," Wax said. "Thank you." The man took Wax's arm gently as he tried to proceed.
"The lady of the house has asked that all attendees be unburdened of items of a vulgar nature, my lord, for the safety of all parties attending."
Wax blinked, then finally got it. "We have to check weapons?"
You're kidding.
The tall man said nothing.
I don't think he's the joking type, Steris noted.
You realize, Swack said, that I'm a coin shot. I could kill a dozen people with your cufflinks.
We'd appreciate it if you didn't, the doorkeeper said. If you please, Lord Ladrian, there are to be no exceptions. Do we need to call the House Lurcher to make certain you are being honest with us?
No, Wax said, pulling his arm free. But if something goes wrong tonight, you're going to wish we'd never had this conversation.
He walked with Steris to the counter where white-gloved servants were taking hats in exchange for tickets. He reluctantly took Vindication from the holster under his arm and set her on the counter.
Is that all, my lord?
The woman there asked. He hesitated, then sighed and knelt, pulling his backup gun, a tiny two-shotter from the holster on his calf. He dropped it onto the counter.
Might we have a look in the lady's purse?
The servant asked. Steris submitted.
You realize, Wax said, that I'm a deputized constable. If anyone should be armed, it's me.
The servants said nothing, though they seemed embarrassed as they handed back Steris's purse and gave Wax a ticket for his weapons.
Let's go, he said, pocketing the pasteboard and trying, unsuccessfully, to hide his annoyance.
Together, they approached the ballroom.
Wayne liked how banks worked. They had style. Many people, they'd keep their money out of sight, hidden under beds and some such. What was the fun of that? But a bank was a target. Building a place like this and stuffing it full of cash was like climbing atop a hill and daring anyone who approached to try to knock you off. He figured that must be the point, the sport of it. Why else would they put so much valuable stuff together in one place? It was supposed to be a message, proof to the little people that some folks were so rich they could use their money to build a house for their money and still have enough money left to fill that house. Robbing such a place was suicide, so all that potential thieves could do was stand outside and salivate, thinking of the stuff inside. Really, a bank was like a giant sign erected to say "Rust off" to everyone who passed by, which was magnificent.
He and Marcy stopped on the long flight of steps up to the front, which was set with stained glass windows and banners, after the classical Cantonesque style of architecture. Marcy wanted to come here before the graveyards, something about the bank records leading them to the right location.
All right, see, Wayne said. I've got it figured out. I'm going to be a rich fellow. Made loads off of the sweat and blood of lesser men. Only I won't say it like that, 'cause I'll be in character, you see.
Is that so?
Marcy said, starting up the steps.
Yep, Wayne said, joining her. Even brought my fancy hat.
He held up a top hat and spun it on his finger.
That hat belongs to Waxillium.
No, it don't, Wayne said, putting it on. I give him a rat for it.
A rat?
Minus the tail, Wayne said, on account of this hat being kind of dusty when I took it. Anyway, I'll be the rich fellow. You be my younger brother's daughter.
I'm not young enough to be your niece, Marcy said. At least not one who...
She trailed off as Wayne scrunched his face up good, emphasizing wrinkles and brought out his fake mustache.
Right, she added. I'd forgotten about that.
No, my dear, Wayne said. While I am distracting the employees of this fine establishment with a depository request, you shall steal into their records room and acquaint yourself with the requisite information. It shouldn't test your skills, as I shall regale them with descriptions of my wealth and prestige, which should draw the attention of most who are still working at this late hour.
Wonderful, Marcy said.
As an aside, my dear, Wayne added, I am not fond at all of your dalliance with that farmhand upon our estate. He is far beneath you in stature, and your indiscretion will surely besmirch our good name.
Oh, please.
Plus, he has warts, Wayne added as they reached the top of the steps, and is prone to extreme bouts of flatulence, and...
Are you going to be talking about this the entire time?
Of course. The bank's employees need to know how I toil with the next generation and its woefully inadequate ability to make decisions my generation found simple and obvious.
Grand, Marcy said, pushing through the bank's broad glass doors. A banker immediately rushed up to them.
I'm sorry, we're very near closing.
My good man, Wayne began, I'm certain you can make time for the investment opportunity you will soon find present in...
We're from the Ellendale Constabulary, Marcy interrupted, taking out her engraved credential plate and holding it up. Captain Marcy Combs, I'd like to look over some of your deposit records. Shouldn't take but a few minutes and I'll be out of your hair.
Wayne floundered, then gaped at her as the banker, a squat, swarthy man who had a gut like a cannonball and a head to match, took her certification and looked it over.
That was cheating.
What records do you need? The banker asked guardedly.
Do any of these people have accounts with you? Marcy asked, proffering a paper.
I suppose I can check, the banker said.
He sighed and walked farther into the building to where a clerk sat going over ledgers. He slid through a door behind the desk, and Wayne could hear him muttering to himself in the room beyond.
Now I've got to say, Wayne said, pulling off the top hat, that was the worst example of acting I've ever seen. Who would believe that the rich uncle has a constable for a niece, anyway?
There's no need to lie when the truth will work just as well, Wayne.
No need? Of course there's need! Why, what happens when we have to thump some people, then run off with their ledgers? They're gonna know it was us, and Wax'll have to pay a big heap of compensatory fines.
Fortunately, we're not going to be thumping anyone.
But...
No thumping.
Wayne sighed. Fat lot of fun this was going to be.
I'll have you know that we take the privacy of our patrons very seriously, the banker explained,
hand protectively on the ledgers he'd retrieved from the records room. They sat in his office now, and he had a little desk plaque that named him Mr. Areola. Neither of the others seemed to grasp why Wayne snickered when he read that.
I understand, Marcy said, but I have a healthy suspicion one of these men is a criminal.
Certainly you don't want to abet their activities.
I don't want to violate their trust in me either, the banker said. What makes you so certain these men are criminals? Do you have any proof?
The proof, Marcy said, will be in the numbers. She leaned forward. Do you know how many crimes can be proven by looking at statistics?
Considering the question, I'm going to assume it's a non-trivial number, the banker said, leaning back in his chair and lacing his hands on his ample belly.
Yes, Marcy said. Most crimes can be traced to either passion or wealth. Where wealth is involved, numbers come into play, and where numbers come into play, forensic accounting gives us answers.
The banker didn't seem convinced. But then in Wayne's estimation, he didn't seem completely human, either. He was at least part dolphin. The man continued plying Marcy with questions, obviously stalling for some reason. That made Wayne uncomfortable. Usually when people stalled like that, it was so their mates could have time to arrive and administer a proper beating. He bided his time, playing with objects on the banker's desk, trying to build a tower of them, but he kept his eyes on the door. If someone did arrive to attack them, he'd have to toss Marcy out the window to get away. A moment later, the door swung open. Wayne grabbed for Marcy, his other hand going for one of his dueling canes, but it was only the clerk from outside. She bustled over to the banker, so Wayne didn't feel a bit guilty admiring her bustle, so to speak, and handed him a half sheet of paper.
"What's that?" Marcy asked as the woman left.
"Telegram," Wayne guessed, relaxing. "Checking up on us, are you?"
The banker hesitated, then turned the paper around. It contained a description of Wayne and Marcy, followed by the words, "They are indeed constables under my command. Please afford them every courtesy and liberty in your establishment, though do keep an eye on the short man, and check your till after he leaves."
"Here now," Wayne said. "That's right unfair. Those things cost a clip every 5 words to send, they do. Already wasted good money libeling me."
"Technically, it's defamation," Marcy said.
"Yep," Wayne said. "Manure through and through."
Defamation, Wayne, not... Oh, never mind. She met the eyes of the banker. Are you satisfied?
I suppose, he said, then slid the ledgers over to her.
Numbers, Marcy said, digging in her purse for a moment. She brought out a small book and tapped it with one finger. This contains a list of the common wages for workers in the cemetery business, by the job they do. She pulled open the ledgers. Now, looking at the deposits by our men in question, we can find patterns. Who is putting more money in the bank than their payroll would reasonably account for?
Surely this isn't enough to convict a man, the banker said.
We're not looking to convict, Marcy said, looking through the first ledger. I just need a little direction.
In the minutes that followed, Wayne got his tower to balance with six separate items, including the stapler, which left him feeling rather proud. Eventually, Marcy tapped on one of the ledgers.
Well, the banker asked, did you find your culprit?
Yes, Marcy said, sounding disturbed. All of them.
All of them?
Every rotten one, Marcy said. No pun intended. She took a deep breath, then slapped a ledger closed. I guess I could have picked one at random, Mr. Areola, but still it is good to know.
To know what?
That they're all crooked, she said, and started fishing in her purse again. I should have guessed. Most corpses are buried with something valuable, if only the clothing. No use letting that all rot away.
The banker paled.
They're selling the clothing off the dead people?
That, Marcy said, slipping a small bottle of Siles brandy out of her purse and setting it on the table. And perhaps any jewelry or other personal effects buried with the bodies?
Hey, Wayne said. I'm right dry in the throat, I am. That would sure hit me well, like a morning piss after a nine-pinter the night afore.
That's horrible, the banker said. Yes, Marcy said, but if you think about it, not too horrifying. The only crimes being perpetrated here are against the dead, and their legal rights are questionable.
Wayne fished in his pocket a moment, then brought out a silver letter opener. Where did he get that? He set it on the table and took the drink, downing it in one shot.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Areola,
Marcy continued, taking the letter opener and sliding it toward the banker.
You've been very helpful.
The banker looked at the letter opener with a start, then checked his desk drawer.
Hey, that's mine,
he said, reaching into the desk and pulling out something that looked like a piece of cord.
Is this a rat's tail?
Longest I've ever seen, Wayne said. Quite a prize. Lucky man you are.
How in the world did you...
The banker looked from Wayne to Marcy, then rubbed his head.
Are we finished here?
Yes, Marcy said, standing. Let's go, Wayne.
Off to make an arrest,
the banker said, dropping the tail into the wastebasket, which was a crime in and of itself. The thing was almost two hands long.
Arrest? Marcy asked. Nonsense, Mr. Areola. We aren't here to arrest anyone.
Then what was the point of all that?
Why, Marcy said, I had to know whom to employ, of course. Come along, Wayne.